You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
A few big gay things happened this weekend. Big gay things we can all be proud of. Kirsten Stewart, the actress, tapped to host Saturday Night Live, kind of, sort of, maybe came out during the opening monologue. Sure sounded like it to me. A little background, Kirsten Stewart, who starred in the Twilight vampire movie franchise, famously dated and famously cheated on her co-star, Robert Pattinson. This led Donald Trump, who has famously cheated on every wife he's ever had, including his current wife, this led Trump to attack Stewart in 2012 in a series of, you will never guess it, angry, unhinged tweets. Because cheating is only okay when men do it to women, which is how God intended us to cheat. I think they invited Stewart on to host Saturday Night Live because Trump's no fan of hers and doesn't sound like she's much of a fan of his either. Here she is coming out on SNL.
The president is not a huge fan of me, but that is so okay. And Donald, if you didn't like me then, you're really probably not going to like me now because I'm hosting SNL and I'm like so gay, dude.
It should be noted that Stewart's so gay comment doesn't necessarily mean she literally identifies as gay. Noah Mickelson writes at Huffington Post, she did date Pattinson, someone who, so far as we know, identifies as male, which may mean she identifies as bisexual or pansexual or sexually fluid or in some other way than gay. Fair enough. Stewart has dated men. She has dated women. Robert may or may not identify as male, so we will have to wait for additional comment from Stewart, who seems to have embraced a dykey look and demeanor. Honestly, she had me wondering if Tegan and Sarah didn't have a lost triplet out there somewhere. Another big gay thing we can be proud of this weekend, Lady Gaga performed at the Super Bowl halftime show. She performed her coming out anthem among a selection of her other hits, and that coming out anthem included the lines, "No matter gay, straight or bi, lesbian, transgendered life, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to survive." It was doubtless the first time the word transgendered has been sung at a Super Bowl halftime show, the New York Times dryly, or was it slyly, observed. There was some question going into the Super Bowl as to whether Gaga would, quote-unquote, get political or try to make a statement during her set, and she did, but you know what? She was sly. She opened her set with a few lines from God Bless America, then a song by a socialist, a song about a land without borders, and a few lines that will be familiar to most Americans.
This land is your land. This land is my land. This land was made for you and me.
One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Did you catch that? One nation, indivisible. Indivisible is the name of the movement that sprung up after the election to fight Trump and his "this land is not your land, this is straight, white, male, Christian-only land" agenda. Maybe it was a coincidence, but if there's anything we know about Lady Gaga by now, if there's anything we know about the artist she is, Gaga is all intention and no coincidence. But the single best gay thing that happened this weekend was the massive protest in New York City outside the Stonewall Inn, site of the riots that kicked off the modern gay rights movement, and as of June 2016, our newest national monument. LGBT New Yorkers gathered there outside the Stonewall Inn by the thousands on Saturday afternoon to protest the Trump administration's attacks, the administration's unconstitutional attacks, on immigrants and refugees. Now, earlier in the week, Trump opted not to rescind an executive order signed by Barack Obama that banned discrimination against LGBT federal workers. Some reports indicated that Ivanka Trump may have intervened, convincing her asshole father to keep the order in place. And some reporters wondered whether Trump's quote-unquote pro-LGBT move might divide LGBT Americans from the protest struggle against Trump. 2 points. First, LGBT Americans are not fucking stupid. Really, at this point, you would think the enemies of LGBT equality would know at least that. We aren't fucking stupid. We know that Trump has pledged to sign the First Amendment Defense Act into law, which would legalize discrimination against LGBT Americans and make that executive order he didn't rescind moot. And we've just seen him nominate someone to the right of Antonin Scalia to the Supreme Court. And LGBT Americans, like we've been saying since the beginning of the modern movement for LGBT equality, are everywhere. We are everywhere. We have been slapping that on t-shirts and buttons and chanting that at rallies for decades. And it's true. We are everywhere. And we are everywhere because we are everyone. LGBT people come in all colors, all faiths, all classes. We are American citizens, we are refugees, and we are immigrants, documented and undocumented. So an attack on immigrants and refugees is also an attack on queer people because some immigrants and refugees are queer. Queer Americans have skin in this game. We have skin in every game. The right has attempted to drive a wedge between LGBT Americans and immigrants and refugees. They have attempted to divide us. The turnout this weekend in New York City at the Stonewall Inn on Saturday afternoon, that was our answer. We said no. We will not be divided. We are indivisible. Okay, this week on the Micro and Free Savage Lovecast, tons of your questions, lots of my answers, and ads. And on the subscription Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, more questions, more answers, and no ads. And we take a deep dive into polyamory culture with Cunning Minx, the host of the Polyamory Weekly Podcast. She helps me answer a bunch of poly-related questions. And if you're curious about polyamory, be sure to get a subscription to the Magnum version of this show at www.savagelovecast.com. The Savage Lovecast is sponsored by Babeland, a woman-owned sex toy retailer. You can shop Babeland boutiques in Seattle and New York, brick and mortar, or you can find them online at Babeland.com. Right now, get 15% off in stores or from Babeland.com with code SAVAGE at checkout. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Bull and Branch, luxury, affordable, fair trade certified sheets. Get $50 off a set of sheets plus free shipping by going to bullandbranch.com and entering Savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by adamandeve.com. Get 50% off one item and free shipping when you enter the offer code SAVAGE at checkout.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 31-year-old male from southeastern Pennsylvania calling about a relationship that I'm in the midst of with a 24-year-old who moved about 4 months ago to New York City to pursue being a ballerina full time. Now, my question regards the dynamics of whether or not I am able to voice certain concerns to her about her career, those mainly being the fact that she's moved up to New York, she's got herself a serving job, and frankly, she's been lazy about pursuing her career dancing. When I say lazy, I mean she rarely practices, she drinks too much, she doesn't keep her diet in line with what a ballerina's would typically be. And that's all fine and well, but her happiness is definitely tied up in her success as a ballerina. And as she continues to lose kind of her physical ability to dance because of her kind of lack of watchful eating and drinking and lack of exercise, I've been growing increasingly concerned, and I want to say something to her. I've kind of voiced my concerns before in the form of, hey, you know, you moved up to New York to dance. That's the reason that we can't be together all the time. But nothing seems to change. So I don't really know where my place is in talking to her about this, because I mean, as far as ballerinas are concerned, as far as most people, and especially women are concerned, diet tends to be a pretty touchy subject, and so does weight gain. By no means is she what some might consider fat, but she's definitely gained enough weight that it's made dancing a little more complicated for her, and certainly more challenging, and not in a positive fashion. So I don't know if I'm just being an asshole and being overly judgmental, or if it's even my place to say something to her about the fact that she's not being very healthy, or and she's not eating the right things, she's not drinking the right things, or where my role comes into place here. I'd love to help, but at the same time, I don't want to hurt her in a really significant fashion. I don't want to affect her eating habits in a negative way. I don't want her to stop eating. I don't want her to be bulimic, because that's something that her sister has toyed around with in the past.
I have to say I'm a little shocked by your call, because I follow a lot of ballet dancers on Instagram, and I wasn't aware that there were female ballet dancers. Maybe that's just selection bias on my part around who I follow on Instagram and why I follow them. Look, boyfriend for now. People move to New York with one dream, and New York has a way of grinding out people's dreams, extinguishing the dreams often that people arrive in New York dreaming. But New York also has this ability to bestow a new dream on people who blow into town. Because, you know, if you go to New York because you want to be a singer, you want to be a ballet dancer, you want to be a visual artist, there's a lot of competition there. And you may have been the best goddamn ballet dancer in your county in Pennsylvania, but the odds that that translates into being in the top 0.01% of ballet dancers in a much more competitive market for ballet dancers like New York City are pretty slim. So it could be that your girlfriend is eating a bit of her feelings. Maybe she's grieving the fact that she probably can't be a ballet dancer, and she's incubating a new dream. Maybe she's going to go into show dance, which welcomes people of different body types. If you go see Broadway shows, you won't see just women who subsist on a ballet dancer's diet, which is basically cigarettes, 3 almonds a week, and oxygen. You'll see women of all different sorts of body types. But this isn't your place. It's not your place to reach out to your girlfriend from Pennsylvania and knock the pastrami sandwich out of her hand. She's 21 years old. She's in New York City. She's got a job. She's finding her way. She's making contacts. She's having lunch. And you got to let her do that. You got to let her figure that out all on her own without trying to micromanage her from afar. I don't think that you will induce bulimia in her if you attempt to knock the pastrami sandwich out of her hand from Pennsylvania. I do think you will hasten the formal end of this relationship if you tried to do that. So if you want to remain her boyfriend for the time being, keep your mouth shut about what she's stuffing in hers.
Hi, Dan. I am a 40-something bisexual female married to the love of my life for 20 years. We adopted 2 boys. For Christmas, we got them tablets. They're 10 and 11, and we monitor their activities online using a Disney Circle, which tells us how long they're on the tablets, what websites they've been to, et cetera, et cetera. We let them have free-for-all time on their computer, and you can just imagine what websites 10 and 11-year-old boys want to go to, which I'm fine with. We're progressive liberals, very sex-positive. We're very open with them, appropriately open with them. You know, we use the terms penis and vagina. Any questions that they have, we answer. You know, we go over condom use, very sex positive in an appropriate light. My question is, at what age is it appropriate to not monitor their online activity? Am I going to need to be policing this until they graduate high school? I don't want to be a mom that smothers, but I also don't want my children to be brought up on, you know, charges for exchanging pictures with, you know, let's say they're 18 and they exchange pictures with their 16-year-old girlfriend. And we talked about that too. I'm just curious, at what age for young men is it appropriate for them to have free internet access?
I would say 10 or 11 is a little too young for completely free access to all the delights of the internet. However, you know, asking at what point a young person, your sons, when they become teenagers, for example, at what point they should be allowed to have free access to the internet is like asking at what point should someone who's jumped into a pool be allowed to have free access to H2O molecules. They're swimming in it. Your kids are growing up surrounded by the internet. The internet is everywhere they go. Even if you monitor their devices, even if you put filters on their devices, their friends have devices, and your kids are probably going to be tech savvier than you are, just as the tech savvy at-risk youth here are much tech savvier than I will ever be, even with their tutelage. Your kids are going to find a way around whatever blocks you throw in their way. So echoing what is supposed to be the U.S. Senate's role, I think parents here have responsibility to advise and consent. You should, as you have been doing, advise your kids about smart internet usage. Warn them about places they may wind up on the internet where they could end up seeing things that are illegal to look at. And they have to be careful not to just keep clicking through and clicking through and clicking through. They have to be careful about swapping photos for the reasons that you cite. They don't want to be brought up on charges of creating or possessing or distributing child pornography, as so many other young people have been brought up on ridiculously all over the country. They also don't want to be taken advantage of by online predators, by people asking them to get on Chatterbait or whatever the current jack off for me program is on the web, because people have been seduced by people and convinced to sit with them and masturbate and then blackmailed with the videos that they created. And finally, and I think the most important conversation you need to have with your kid is about the pornography that they're going to encounter, the stuff that they're going to see. And you need to have a chat with them, not right now, but by the time they're 13, about pornography. You need to get in between the images and their heads so that they are critical and thoughtful consumers of pornography, that what they're going to see when they look at porn is kabuki sex. It's not real life human sex. It's performance. It looks as much like sex as an action movie looks like Saturday afternoon hanging out with mom and dad, which is to say, not at all. And a lot of pornography is created for people who are angry, particularly a lot of the pornography out there created for straight men. They want to look at the women that they would like to be with, but on some level know they can't be with, because those women wouldn't be with them, and they at once desire and are furious with the person in that image. And so I think a lot of pornography is shot through with despair and anger. And you don't want your boys, if they're watching that kind of pornography, to succumb to it. You don't want them to adopt those attitudes that they will definitely see portrayed in pornography. And I'm not necessarily talking here about power exchange, BDSM, kink pornography. That sadness, despair, and rage can be detected in all sorts of different kinds of pornography, vanilla and kink. And you can also find pornography that isn't shot through with that despair, anger, and rage if you look for it. But I think it's important that you not pretend to be capable of doing what you are not going to be capable of doing unless you move off the grid, which is to monitor or prevent your kids from accessing whatever the fuck they want to access by the time they're 14 or 15 years old. You need to make them risk-aware, thoughtful consumers of everything they're going to encounter on the web, including the pornography that they are definitely going to encounter on the web. The Savage Lovecast is sponsored by Babeland, a woman-owned sex toy retailer. Babeland welcomes people of all orientations, genders, and experience levels. They provide a fun shopping environment and carry a variety of sex toys, all quality tested and user reviewed. Babeland is more than a place to buy sex toys. They are committed to creating a more passionate world through education as well. Their popular workshop program is designed to enhance your sex life through frank, open, and humorous discussions about sex. If you're in New York or Seattle, take advantage of this unique opportunity to learn from Babeland sex educators by heading to their locations, their brick-and-mortar locations in New York and Seattle. You can shop Babeland boutiques, again, in Seattle and New York, or find them online at babeland.com. Right now, exclusively for Savage Lovecast listeners, Babeland is offering 15% off in stores and from babeland.com. Simply use the code SAVAGE at checkout.
Hey, Dan. I am a trans woman who grew up in Missouri, transitioned in the early 2000s, and because of my transition, I was forced out of college. My parents caught wind of it, and during the hubbub that came from it, they refused to give me their tax forms, so I couldn't continue receiving the scholarships and financial aid that I was getting, so I couldn't finish college. And it's taken me since 2001 to finally get enough resources to come back to Springfield, Missouri, and finish my degree. I had 100 credit hours when I was forced out, so it's really only a year left, and I am going to be able to graduate, which is a huge deal for me. The thing that I'm actually calling about is the university that I am attending is sending their choir to sing for Donald Trump's inauguration, and it's just heartbreaking. I feel like I have worked so hard to finally be able to come back and finish something that was taken away from me. And now I just have to get this sand kicked in my goddamn face. And I just can't believe it. And I am reaching out to everybody I can to tell them how disgusting this is, and talking to as many people as I can and trying to spread the word. And I'm just at my wit's end. I don't know what to do. Honestly, part of me just wants to not finish. And I know that sounds crazy to people when I say it, but it's like, I'm going to get a degree from a university that I feel like I can't even be proud to have attended. And I'm sitting here looking at the smiling faces of all these choral kids in their portrait from the university that they have probably posted on the website. And it just makes me sick to think that I would go to classes with these jagbags who think it's okay to go sing in celebration of this asshole being inaugurated.
I'm really afraid that you've internalized on some level what your parents did to you, because what I got listening to your call, and I'm 100% on your side, I'm flabbergasted that anybody would want to celebrate the inauguration of this dirtbag. But what I got from your call and listening to you was you are about to do to yourself what your parents did to you when they found out that you had transitioned or were transitioning. You're sabotaging your own education.
And I'm going to tell you right now, I called you a few days ago, and I've been walking around with this in my shoe for a couple of days now. I live in Missouri, so I'm full of euphemisms. I've been carrying this around for a couple of days, and I just decided, fuck these guys, fuck them. I'm going to be here for a year, and they can all eat me, and I'm going to walk around, and I'm gonna be a big piece of sand in their shoe for the next year, and I'm gonna be here.
Good. That's the right take.
I'm sorry to pull you out of your day for something that I already decided.
No. I'm happy to talk to you. I do want to ask you though, like before the choir agreed to go and wiggle their tongues up Donald Trump's big fat orange ass, before that happened, before your school decided to be complicit in his inauguration, you live in Missouri. You're going to school in Missouri. You had to know that there were a lot of Trump voters in Missouri.
Oh yeah. I lived here. I grew up here in Missouri and I moved to Chicago and I transitioned up there and I had a great career and everything, and I saved up a buttload of money, and I bought a house, I bought a condo, and I sold a condo, and I went there with nothing. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. You don't need my whole life story, but I went there with nothing, and I came back with enough to basically buy back everything that people stole from me, in
That's
a way,
great.
And I'm really proud of it, and then I get back here, and I'm just like, there's this big part of me that feels like I'm saying it's okay. If I'm here with these people,
No, you're not. You being there with those people is a challenge to those people. You being there demonstrates that they don't rule the world, that Missouri itself is not politically, socially monolithic, that you are a part of that university's story too. And I expect that as there are probably many Trump voters on your campus, there are also probably many, many more people who voted against Trump. University campuses are usually big blue dots, even in red states Missouri. So you are probably in the majority. I don't know if there's a precinct by precinct voting map breakdown of where you live, but if you could go look at it, it might be a balm to your conscience around staying there and not feeling so alienated from that place. Because at least for your campus, at least for the college town you're in, you're probably in the majority of people there who supported not Donald Trump for president.
Yeah, no, and the thing that it drives me crazy, I'll tell you right now, I'll work with people who voted for Donald Trump, and I mean for a better tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. we all have to figure out a way. We all have to figure out a way to build a bridge to better from here, or we all have to start a big fist fight. Like it's one or the other, but we have to work with these people because we have to make them feel like we're all together in this. But the thing that drives me crazy, I feel like even the people who didn't vote for Donald Trump, like down here, they're all like, well, this is the way it is now though. You know, we gotta toe the line for the administration that's in power now. And it's like, no, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like even the blue people, a lot of them, especially the young ones, because they've never seen they have seen what real progress is, but it's like they haven't seen what real horribleness is.
Yeah, they haven't seen what real redress is like, because they're not old enough to remember the George W. Bush administration, the George H.W. Bush administration, or the Ronald Reagan administration.
They don't remember what was before it. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, and that will bring them to their senses. So I wouldn't even, if I were in your shoes, and like, remember how long ago it was that I went to college? My college campus didn't have protections for queer students. There was no anti-discrimination statute at my school that protected students from discrimination for being queer in housing or university employment or from our professors. And yet I stuck around and helped to change it just by fucking being there and sat on a committee to help write an anti-discrimination policy into the university conduct code, actually. So us being places as queers changes those places. So stay, finish your degree, keep kicking ass. And I love that you went to Chicago, you built a life, you bought and sold a condo, you came back to where you grew up. I think that's really important for other people who are listening right now who may be experiencing at the moment what you experienced when you were outed or came out to your parents about transitioning, who are being thrown out, who are being cut off. I think it's really great to hear that from you so that these other kids know that they can stay and they can build a life, that they can get out there and find their people and find a path, and not all is despair and loss, as proven by your own experience.
Oh, thanks, Dan. Thank you. I mean, thanks for calling.
You're welcome. I'm really glad that in the time it took me to call you back, you decided not to drop out, because that's what I was going to tell you. Please don't do to yourself what your parents did. Please don't finish the job. And I'm really glad to hear that you arrived at that before I even got you on the phone.
No, yeah, I don't know. I'm so close. And I'm the first person in my family ever go to college. And I just, it's a big, it's the goal. It's like the thing that I quit drinking a couple years ago. It's the thing that I used to drink and I used to sit around crying about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I got to finish this, but it's just so hard to be. I went and talked to the choir director yesterday.
Good. That's great.
I'll tell you, they all I've never heard people, whitewash something that they're doing so easily. And just there's a cognitive, hurdle that they've all built for themselves. They're like, we're just going to the inauguration. We're not there for Donald Trump. It's like, you guys, they're all normalizing this bullshit.
Right.
And they don't understand that that's what they're doing. And it's like,
but you by going there and confronting them, you by getting in their face, you by reaching out, you're doing your part to denormalize something in their heads. You're introducing some doubt. You're putting contention on the table, and that's great. And that's what you can do. And sometimes people say, I reached out, I fought, I screamed and yelled, but nothing changed and I'm at my wit's end. And that's not the way you should look at screaming and yelling and throwing a fit, because sometimes there's not an immediate payoff. Sometimes, you protest a particular thing that you find objectionable and injustice and there's no change. It didn't end that particular injustice. It didn't prevent the choir from going to Washington to moo at Donald Trump's inauguration. But who knows the impact that your words are going to have on that choir director in the future? Who knows what the stink that you raised might prevent happening down the road, or the change it might make in people's consciousnesses down the road? So the stink that you raised is valuable all by itself, even if the change that you wanted didn't come to pass. Okay. So props to you. Props to you. And please get your degree. Please stay. Don't leave.
Okay. Thank you.
Your presence makes that campus a better and more just place, regardless of what this fucking choir is about to do. And your absence, absenting yourself from it, hurts you and hurts that campus and makes it a lesser place. Don't go.
Okay.
Good luck.
Okay, thank you so much.
Congratulations. I hear from so many kids who are often in that first stage of parents throwing them out, parents cutting them off. It's so great to hear from somebody who lived that and is on the other side of it and came through. That's a real balm for my soul. One of my favorite It Gets Better videos was this woman who said, it doesn't get better. What happens is you get stronger. I really think that's true.
Thank you, Dan. Take care.
You too. Bye. There's one important thing you can do to help ensure having a good day, and that's getting a good night's sleep the night before. One company has set out to make this possible. It is Boll & Branch. They've reinvented sheets and bedding with the sole purpose of making your nights more comfortable than ever. This is a company I want you to discover. Their bedding is so soft, it will be a new standard of comfort that you'll measure everything else by. You can only get these products at one place, bollandbranch.com, where you know you're paying for quality sheets and not department store overhead. You're getting amazingly luxurious sheets for a couple of $100. Go online to Boll, that's B-O-L-L, and branch.com, and they'll let you try their sheets risk-free for 30 nights. And it gets even better. Go to bollandbranch.com today for 20% off your entire order. Sheets, towels, blankets, duvet covers, everything, plus free shipping. And all their products come beautifully packaged in their signature boxes. Go to bollandbranch.com today for 20% off your entire order and use promo code SAVAGE. bollandbranch.com, promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller, a 20-year-old bisexual female from the Southwest. So I'm calling in response to a lady who said she was extremely happy and excited to be out to her family because of the advice she heard on your show. And I guess I had a similar situation recently on Christmas Eve. I was out to dinner with my family, and I was kind of outed by my mom. I've been dating a guy for 2.5 years, so I could easily pass as straight. And my family is extremely conservative Christian, so I've always kind of just preferred to pretend I'm straight and kind of just go with that until I'm at least more comfortable talking about it. But basically, I had a hickey on my neck, and my mom basically asked, you know, is that from a guy or a girl? And immediately, my face turned extremely red, and I was so just taken aback, like, how did she know? What, you know, what the heck, kind of. And I looked at my sister, who knows. She was kind of like, no, I didn't tell her. Now, my mom had had a few drinks, but she proceeded to kind of ask some pretty insensitive questions, such as, is this why your boyfriend broke up with you? Because me and my boyfriend recently broke up. Do you just have sex with anyone? I don't understand the difference between, you know, having like a strong friendship connection and a sexual connection. Or romantic, I guess. It was just a lot of insensitive questions, and it left me reeling and kind of confused and just like sad, because I knew that this was not a conversation I was anywhere ready to have with my mom for the next, you know, 5-ish years. And unlike the caller that said she felt empowered, I felt sad and confused and now really awkward between my mom and I. So just any thoughts?
So just to be clear, you didn't come out to your mother at any point. Your mother accidentally tricked you into outing yourself, or a physiological response that you weren't in control of, the blushing when she said, is it a hickey from a guy or a girl, outed you, and partly, and then the look to your sister who said, I didn't tell her, finished the job and outed you entirely. That's how this played out. Ugh, I'm sorry. You came out to your parents. You came out to your mother. You came out on Christmas or Christmas Eve at dinner, probably with other family around, without intending to. It's a comedy of coming out errors, and you weren't ready for it. So then, of course, you weren't ready for your half-drunk, religiously conservative mother to start peppering you with questions about bisexuality. But you are out now, and your mother has questions, and it's your job to answer them. And they're going to be, by design, almost always, those questions that you're going to get from your parents when you come out to them are going to be insensitive. And if you're not ready to answer them right now, you can tell your mother that you're just not ready to answer them right now. And you can hand her a stack of books. Google books about bisexuality, and you will find all sorts of great lists online of recommended reading on bisexuality. And you can get your mother a couple of books, tell her to read them, read the same book yourself, and have a chat with your mother. And game out some responses to her questions. When she says, do you have sex with anyone? Because you have sex with men and women, you can look at her and say, do you have sex with any man? Do you have sex with all men? Every man you see, mom, you want to fuck? Sometimes it helps to be as blunt and insulting and insensitive as the person asking the question is being, because it rubs their noses in how ridiculously idiotic and insensitive their own question is. How do you tell the difference between a friendship connection and a sexual connection? Mom, you have friends who are guys. Presuming your mom has some friends who are guys. How did you tell the difference between whether you wanted to be their friends or suck their cocks? When did that realization dawn on you, Mom? Pretty early. You know the people that you're actually attracted to versus the people that you're not attracted to. That there's something ephemeral there. There's that spark of attraction, and it exists or it kind of doesn't exist. And it doesn't exist for everybody who nominally falls into the group of people gender-wise that you are attracted to. Otherwise, you would be sucking all the dicks, Mom. And you're not sucking all the dicks. You're just sucking Dad's dick. You might want to translate that into language that's more appropriate for your particular mother. That's how I would have put it, and in some ways did put things to my mother. But we had a relationship where we could be that blunt and sarcastic with each other. If you don't have that kind of relationship with your mother, you can rephrase my answers in such a way that they are your mom appropriate. But brace yourself. You will have to answer questions. You have to parent your parents when you come out to your parents. What do parents do for years when you're a kid? They answer so many goddamned questions. Kids are full of questions. Sometimes it's fucking annoying. It's a cliche for parents to complain about their toddlers asking them question after question after question. Well, come out to your parents and they turn into toddlers. And you're going to have to answer a lot of their questions a little sooner than you had hoped to. That's why I recommend you get a book or two. Have a little bisexual book club with Mom. Read a couple of books and discuss them. You can make this Valentine's Day one that you'll never forget and one that they'll never forget with this amazing offer from AdamandEve.com. Through Valentine's Day, you will receive 50% off just about any item. Just go to AdamandEve.com and you will find over 18,000 adult entertainment products, including toys, lingerie, and a seemingly endless selection of adult DVDs. And there's more. They will also throw in free shipping on your entire order. So check out AdamandEve.com today for this special Valentine's offer. Get 50% off one item and free shipping when you enter the offer code SAVAGE at checkout. SAVAGE, that's SAVAGE at checkout at AdamandEve.com.
Hey, Dad, my name is Matt. I have a question. I was dating a woman. She's 36 and I am, gosh, I'm 24. We had a really good first date. And we were smooching by the end of it, which was great. But I went back to my home state for the holidays, and when I came back, I shot her a text, and she said she was not interested in seeing me again. What should I do here? I really want to get to know this woman better, and she definitely was not arguing when my tongue was in her mouth.
Dude, she doesn't want to see you again. She doesn't want your tongue in her mouth again, and that's it. It's over. It wasn't even anything, but it's over. Whatever it was, the minor thing that it was is now no longer a thing. And who knows why? She has reasons. You're too young for her. Maybe she didn't like the taste of your spit. Maybe she has a parasitic twin and she doesn't think she can trust you to be discreet after the big reveal. Who knows? You don't. I don't. The only person who knows is this woman, and she's not saying. Why did she let you kiss her then? You say that she seemed to like your tongue in her mouth. Well, you can't know that. You can't know that she actually liked it. Women will sometimes, when they're on a date with a guy, engage in a kind of passive resistance. They will deflect because they've been socialized to always maybe protect the guy's ego first and foremost. Sometimes women deflect and smile and laugh and seem to be having a good time because they're afraid of how the guy might react if she just says, you know, I'm not feeling it, and no, and I'm going home. And so a woman who's engaged in that kind of passive resistance, deflecting behavior is with a guy who makes a move and wants to kiss her. And rather than put her hand over his mouth and say, yeah, not feeling it, she kisses him for a few minutes just to give him that as she eases him out the door because she has an early flight tomorrow or there's some conflict. She has to go. And it's easier just to kiss the dude for a few minutes and extract yourself from the situation without a confrontation, without having to say no, without having to bruise the guy's ego. But she might have done that because she feared you wouldn't be able to hear the word no. And maybe if that's what went down, she was right to fear that, because here you are, you've heard the word no, and you're not accepting her no. So it's possible she kissed you in that moment. It's possible that she seemed to like your tongue in her mouth, but didn't like your tongue in her mouth and didn't really want to kiss you in that moment. But she worried that she was with a guy who wouldn't take no for an answer in that moment. So she gave him a little bit of a fake yes to get him out of the apartment so that then via email or a phone call, she could give him the no from a distance that she feared giving him up close. But now you've got your no. It's no. And that's your cue not to game this out, not to call me. That's your cue to go away. That's your cue to go find some other girl who actually does want your tongue in her mouth.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 32-year-old woman, straight woman living in the South. I just got into a new relationship. It's only like a couple weeks old. And I'm actually really, really enjoying seeing this guy. He is different from like any other person I've ever dated or was married to. He is different physically, different just emotionally, and it's been actually really refreshing and great. The only problem so far is that his house is a fucking disaster. On New Year's Eve, we hung out, and I went back to his place, and he had been telling me, like, oh, I own my own house. And he drives, like, a really nice brand-new car. So I was like, oh, this will be cool. And the other thing is we live in a major metro, near a major metro Atlanta city. He actually lives kind of downtown. I live just outside of the city. And I have stuff that I do downtown, but my work is just outside of the city. And so it's actually really convenient that he lives downtown because if I'm downtown, I can just spend the night with him. But anyway, when we went to his house, we drove up and it was a complete shithole. And then we went inside and it was an even shittier shithole. I mean, like, there's just shit everywhere. I know that he owns the house. It belonged to his family. And so it's been there for a while. There's just like a lot of junk in the house. Like, I even had a hard time telling like whether or not he can use the kitchen. His room is in a pretty bad shape. He's got, you know, instead of curtains, he's got blankets up on the wall. His bathroom is really gross. And he kind of lives this bachelor lifestyle. He lives with another dude. There was another roommate who just got married, who's moving out. And he was like, oh, all this stuff is his. It's not all that one dude. There's just too much stuff. I think that he's just kind of let things go because he's been single. But the thing is, he's 36. I kind of feel like he should have this shit together a little bit. And so I really want to keep seeing him. I really want to keep having sex with him. I really want to keep hanging out with him because I actually think this is turning into something really good. But I don't want to go over to his house. It's so gross. And my house is way far away from all the stuff that we want to do. I don't know what to do. It's new. I don't know how to bring this up with him. I want to offer to help. I will totally offer to help clean it up. But I don't know how to approach this without offending him so early on in the relationship.
I went on a couple of dates once with a guy, not just a couple of dates. We fucked around a couple of times at my place. And then I went to his place with him for the first time to spend the night and walked in. And it looked like what you describe encountering when you walked into this guy that you've been seeing, into his place. Junk everywhere, sink full of dishes covered in mold and crap, newspapers, papers, everywhere. And then the last straw, I went into the bathroom and lifted the lid on the toilet to take a piss, and there was mold growing all over the inside of the toilet. Not just the little ring at the water line from a toilet that's not washed, from a toilet that's not scrubbed often enough, but this barrier reef of coral, God knows what the fuck it was, growing in his toilet all along that ring. It was disgusting. I did not spend the night. I made my excuses and I never saw the guy again. So I feel like I might not be the best person to offer you advice if your hope is to continue to see this slob. Because there's a level of filthiness and hoarderiness that if you're going to be this person's life partner, you're going to have to take complete responsibility for. And the forces of entropy are strong and he will pull you down because forces of entropy are strong and things tack toward chaos and disorder, and it takes will and commitment and consistency to keep a house in some relative semblance of order and cleanliness. So, if you want to date this guy, if you want to risk being this guy's life partner, if you want to risk being the spouse
on an episode of Hoarders, and not the hoarder on an episode of Hoarders, but the spouse of the hoarder on an episode of Hoarders. The only way I think that's even possible, the only way I think you can even contemplate it, is if this is the kind of guy you can have a direct and straightforward conversation with about your concerns, that you can stand in his apartment or his house and say, this is a fucking pigsty. I can't believe you live like this. I will not live like this. If we are going to get serious about each other, you're going to have to get serious about not living like this, whatever form that takes. I am not going to be your domestic staff. I am not going to clean up after you. He owns a house in the middle of the city. He's got a little money set aside. He could hire some people to help muck out his living quarters and then hire someone to come by once a week or every couple of weeks to help clean it all up again. That person ain't going to be you. And then gauge his reaction. If he doesn't see the problem, run. If he looks around and suddenly sees his living quarters through your eyes and recognizes the problem and then addresses it in part to earn your affections and continued attentions and presence in his life and pussy on his face, then maybe you can continue to see this guy. But you should make your presence conditioned upon improvement, continued improvement, sustained improvement in this area, especially if you're going to ever live together. Because you do not want to live like this. And right now you are in the infatuation stage and you are viewing this mess through that lens. That infatuation stage burns off and you will be left with the mess in the end and resentment and anger and an engine of confrontation that can go and go and go forever at the heart of your relationship. So he changes or you bolt.
I'm calling in response to the woman in 536 who thought that deep-throating her boyfriend was giving her strep throat. I just want to float the idea that maybe the blowjobs have nothing to do with it. I'm wondering if her boyfriend has gotten checked for strep throat. Because this kind of thing was happening to my boyfriend where he kept getting strep throat over and over again. And it turned out that I had it. I just didn't have any symptoms. So I was just giving it to him over and over again. So before you do anything drastic, like give up deep throating, you should send your boyfriend to the doctor and make sure that you're not just getting it from his germs rather than from his dick.
Hey, Dan. This is a response to the woman from episode 536 whose parents were hosting the Syrian refugee family. I would say give them a chance. I mean, she says that it's 99% sure that these people are going to have a problem with her relationship and her sexual orientation, but speaking as a person who's part of a minority group and a family of immigrants, the worst thing you can do is prejudge these people. So I would just say, like, tell them and then, you know, let the chips fall where they may.
Hi, this is just a comment for episode 536 and the guy that was seeing the very religious girl. If you really like her, don't give up on her. I used to be that girl, and the guy that I'm now with for 3 years, he helped me to see the light, if you will. He helped to unbrainwash me from the religious excrement that had been where my brain was. So please, you know, just continue to ask her questions. Continue to ask her why she believes things and why she, just ask why. Just ask why all the time, why women can't do things, why gay people are bad. Just continue to ask her why and make her back it up, and soon she'll see that there's nothing to back it up with at all. And if you really like her, then that'll be great. And just so you know, I used to be one of them, and I'm happy to not be anymore.
And we're going to leave it there. Be sure to listen to me rant at length about politics with Eli Sanders and Rip Smith on the Strangers Political Podcast of Blabbermouth. Read my weekly column, Savage Love, in newspapers all over the country, including the Philadelphia Weekly. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Cunning Minx on Twitter at Cunning Minx. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.